He clearly has a problem with gay marriage, but he can't articulate it. It's not acceptable to express this sentiment in public life.
Hang on,
and
on,
I think Tony Abbott. Tony Abbott is now being described as someone from the Dark Ages for believing what humanity has believed for thousands of years.
Brendan O'Neill there, editor of UK magazine Spiked, on Q&A, talking about PM Tony Abbott's views on same-sex marriage. He wrote about that experience this week in The Australian. He said this: something terrifying has happened during the past 5 years, a belief it was held by virtually all human beings for centuries, has been rebranded as bigotry, something that may no longer be expressed in polite society. Brendan is taking up arms, verbally, against what he calls the empire of offence. And Brendan now joins us via Skype from Brisbane. Brendan, welcome.
Hi.
This is something of a hot talking point in certain quarters, the dead hand of progressive conformity.
Yes, absolutely. I think somehow the left has completely lost its direction and has gone from being a movement that believed in liberation, whether it was women's liberation, gay liberation, national liberation, to being a movement that believes in control and censorship and outlawing anything that has the temerity to offend any group, any individual, any ethnic minority, any gender identity. That's the great issue for someone like me. I still consider myself part of the left, or I certainly came from the left, and I'm just bamboozled at how the left has so dramatically lost its direction on the issue of freedom of speech and freedom of thought.
What about, I mean, to take that issue of gay marriage, what if that choking conformity, as you put it, just turns out to be a widely held consensus?
I'm always a little bit suspicious of consensus. I know that's not necessarily a good thing, but I'm certainly suspicious of consensuses that arise as speedily and as suffocatingly as the one around gay marriage has. 10 years ago, if you were arguing in favour of gay marriage, you were looked upon as being pretty eccentric. Now, if you argue against it, you're looked upon as being psychopathic. I mean, that has been an extraordinary shift in a very short period of time, and we haven't seen anything like that in modern history.
Is it actually true, though? I mean, the thing about being looked on as being psychopathic, I mean, for example, in the legislation, or the bill, at least the private members bill that exists in the Australian Parliament, it makes provision for people of various belief to exclude themselves from, you know, being forced to conduct gay marriages, for example. I mean, there's clear acknowledgement in that framework that people hold different views.
The law and public life are sometimes very different things. Now, there are also laws in European countries that have instituted gay marriage, which say people still have freedom of conscience, religious people don't have to officiate gay weddings. But nonetheless, within those societies, there is still an intolerant climate, particularly around the media, particularly in political groups, particularly on Twitter, where people who criticize gay marriage can be hounded and harassed and demonized. Just because there's a law which says that a priest doesn't necessarily have to do this doesn't mean that there doesn't still exist an intolerant climate against anyone who cleaves to the old idea that a marriage should be between a man and a woman.
I wonder, Brendan O'Neill, whether that group of intolerant people is as potentially small as that group of social conservatives excluded by that sense of consensus. We're looking at two very vocal minorities on the fringe of what is a very broad sweep of shared opinion.
I think you're probably right. I think the intolerant progressives, as they're called, are probably a bit larger, but they're nonetheless quite small. But I think they are very influential. They have this huge influence on public life. In Britain, we have this phenomenon called the shy Tory, which is the fact that even though the Tories are the dominant party and won a majority in our election this year, still people are reluctant to admit in public life that they are Tories. And that's because this small, vocal, noisy group of so-called progressives is very influential and dominates public discussion. I think we not only have shy Tories now, we also have shy Christians, shy old people, shy traditionalists, people who are reluctant to express themselves in public because of a climate that has been instituted by a fairly small but very influential group of people.
Perhaps the tide of social opinion, though, is progressive, and that then leaves an isolated. But in this country, an extremely vocal rump of social conservatives that insist that they represent a wrong silent majority.
But I think there is a silent majority. I mean, I'm always been slightly wary of that phrase, because when it was first used by Nixon in the 1960s and early 1970s, it was largely a way of it was a kind of cover for some racist attitudes and the problem that Nixon and others had with the drive in civil rights. So I've always been a bit wary of that phrase. But I do think there is a spiral of silence today where lots of people censor themselves if they feel that they have the wrong views, if they feel that they won't be taken seriously in public life. I don't think gay marriage is a progressive issue. I think it's not a progressive issue for two reasons. Firstly, because I think it expands the authority of the state over our personal relationships and over the very definition of marriage. And secondly, because it extends the authority of the state over conscience, over what people believe.
I mean, in Ireland, we saw the actual police on the streets waving the rainbow flag in support of gay marriage. The police weren't waving black nationalist flags in America in the 1950s and the 1960s. They were beating the hell out of those people. There's the fact that the state is so favourable of gay marriage should make people a little bit suspicious.
Brendan O'Neill's a guest here on Sunday Expert. We're talking about what Brendan describes as the empire of offence. And Brendan, let's broaden that there to that idea. And this is before the big conversation we've been having in recent times in this country on same-sex marriage. This idea about offence has been extremely topical. Why is being offended necessarily a bad thing?
It's not necessarily a bad thing. I feel offended all the time. I hear people talking nonsense. I see posters on the streets that I find offensive. I see people spitting in the street. I find that deeply offensive. But where it becomes a problem is when you arrogantly believe that you have the right to silence or suppress or harass or demonize the person who's causing you offense. You don't have the right not to feel offended. And the problem with the society we live in today is not only that people so ostentatiously take offense, which in itself is quite problematic, but also that they feel they can act on it and crush those who are offending them, which is just deeply censorious and illiberal.
Is there something here about our moment as well and the way in which we're communicating with each other? And look, not to just to get to the impoliteness of social media, but more about the pace of the conversation, the vast connectiveness of the conversation now that exacerbates the sort of things you're talking about.
I think that could well be true. I think technology certainly lends itself to this climate, although I don't think technology is to blame. I think technology like Twitter, for example, is moulding itself around a cultural climate of intolerance that already existed for a few years beforehand. But I think I'm really struck by the fact that people don't seem to say to each other anymore, "I disagree with you." Instead, they say, "Oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. What is going on?" And you see this kind of exchange all the time where people are really shocked that someone has a different view to theirs. And I find that very surprising. I think it's extremely healthy to have different clashing, controversial, conflicting views, because that's the way in which you are able to have a genuine debate, to arrive at some kind of truth, to really hammer an issue out in detail. If everyone kind of slinks into their own little force field and only listen to their own views and views that they like, then they will just become prejudiced, rigid, dogmatic. You have to subject yourself to criticism and ridicule and discussion in order to improve your own ideas and in order to try and influence other people.
So, I mean, if we became like that, we would be mimicking our politics, wouldn't we? I mean, which makes me wonder, Brendan, and you know, the politics of Australia, of the UK, of the US. I mean, they're almost identically binary and vicious. But does that lead or does that follow that social movement that you're talking about?
I think the viciousness of modern mainstream politics often actually disguises the shallowness of the content. You know, the less of substance there is, the less ideology there is. You know, we live in a fairly post-ideological age. You know, the great left and right beliefs are kind of on the wane. The less of substance there is, the more shrill they seem to become. The kind of thing I'm talking about is genuine, substantial, conflicting debate, where we recognize we all have different interests and we talk about them honestly. I don't think we should ever be afraid of offending people, because giving offense can be a good thing, because it shows that you are being honest.
Has there ever been a time, Brendan, when that robust conversation actually took place and to good effect? Is it a wistful thing that you're dreaming of there?
I think there have definitely been periods in history when debate has been more robust and healthier than it is now. We're very thin-skinned now. We seem to freak out at the first instance of disagreement or offensiveness. The thing we have to bear in mind is that giving offence is the engine of human progress. We wouldn't live in the comfortable, free, liberal society we live in if earlier generations hadn't given offence. You know, as George Bernard Shaw says, all great truths begin as blasphemies. And if we restrict people's right to blaspheme and to experiment and to offend and to outrage, then we're potentially nipping in the bud the next great movement, the next great leap forward. We have to allow people to be as offensive as they want.
Brendan and Neil, I think we've covered various waterfronts in our conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Brendan O'Neill, joining us there via Skype. He's editor of Spiked magazine based in the UK. And a controversial hero of last week's episode of Q&A. You may have caught that. It's the Sunday Extra here on RN.